Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling for Leighton Kling Behind the Scenes. Coming up on today's episode, we've got an interview with Santiago Gailino of Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. He'll join us to discuss the current state of retail hiring and onboarding as a result of the pandemic. He'll also discuss ways in which retailers could or perhaps should improve the hiring and onboarding experience, as well as ensuring their current staff is well-trained. We'll also discuss Kroger in our Looking Ahead story as they identify food trends for 2021. We'll discuss Rite Aid briefly and, in our top story, information released by the Retail Feedback Group. A reminder that you can like us and rate us however you access us. Those ratings certainly help others to find our show, so every rating matters. As long as you like us, feel free to rate us, and that'll help others navigate to our Retail Focus Podcast. You can also check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Retail Podcast. So as we mentioned, information released by the Retail Feedback Group this week came out, and the information they came up with suggests that grocery customers are generally happier with their in-store experience versus April. So this is a study basically from the Retail Feedback Group, who does this type of thing basically every season. Their last survey was in April, and they've noticed a number of positive trends coming into the fall. So again, this was called their Fall U.S. Online and In-Store Grocery Shopping Study, and the data came out this week. But other data I think found in the study could be instructive as far as ongoing consumer sentiment and habits are concerned with regard to grocery, which again has been one of the hottest categories, that alongside home furnishings and home improvement during the course of the pandemic. Now, this study covered a nationally representative sample, that's a direct quote, of 2,000 shoppers who shopped either in-store or online for food and groceries during the last 30 days. So first, let's cover the headline data before we get into some of the other ancillary data that I think we found interesting. RFG studies core experience factors on a linear basis. So they compare data sequentially throughout time, but there was also a number of year-over-year or pre-pandemic comparisons in this report. The 8 core experience factors that they study before they ask other questions regarding grocery shopping habits are quality and freshness, cleanliness, friendliness or staff attitude, checkout speed, efficiency, variety or selection, staff knowledge, staff availability, and value for money. And on a high level, all of these factors for their fall study scored over a 4 on a 5-point scale in aggregate, with quality and freshness actually topping out among the categories at a score of 4.43. What this tells me, this is a great sign as far as retail is concerned, because this tells me that grocery retailers are doing the job, they're appealing to customers, and customers are finding all of these propositions stellar. To have all of these things score above a 4 on a 5-point scale in aggregate, it's pretty remarkable when you take into account a data set of 2,000 shoppers. So first of all, you certainly applaud the grocery sector. And they also interviewed those that shopped at Amazon exclusively for groceries. And they kind of broke things down. Amazon, Walmart, Instacart, they broke a number of things down in some of the smaller data points. But two of the biggest jumps in terms of those core experience factors took place in variety or selection, which was up a 0.25 point to 4.25 out of 5, and then value for the money, up 0.17 of a point from April. And this is crucial because we've talked actually pretty regularly on the podcast over the last couple of weeks, but particularly with Cheryl Sullivan, about how price conscious and price sensitive customers are right now, especially in grocery. And that value for money aspect, that was the lowest scoring category in April's study. So the fact that you see this big jump, it's a positive thing for grocers as people are starting to see more value for their money. And again, that's across all categories. So that particular one wasn't divvied out by grocer. Overall satisfaction aggregated across all of those 8 categories was up from 4.08 to 4.23. So again, basically everyone in this sector killing it as far as the customer experience is concerned. And, you know, the other thing too is this makes complete sense because April's survey took place in the height of the panic buying period. Stores were out of stock of a great many things. There was a lot of uncertainty about the virus, had everyone on edge. So you could certainly forgive people to say that their retail experience was less in April than it is now. But seeing the way in which grocers are able to serve the U.S. public is quite amazing, especially when you take into account that the perception of these grocers is excellent to stellar in most people's minds. Now, speaking of out of stocks, the number of customers reporting that a grocer had everything in stock that they intended to purchase, that saw a big boost and was likely a big reason why those core experience factors took off. 76% in the fall survey versus 49% in April. We all know there were a ton of out of stocks in April in the heart of the pandemic panic buying. Interestingly, though, this number for the fall was lower for those who did grocery shopping online. Only 68% of customers said that when they shopped online, everything was in stock versus 76% who shopped in person. So I do think that's an interesting delineation, and that might explain what we'll talk about a little bit later on in this story. So let's talk about those secondary findings. Perhaps the one that jumped out to me the most was regarding stockpiling. We are still seeing stockpiling attitudes. And the questions asked in the survey, I think, were asked in an interesting way, because it wasn't out and out, are you stockpiling groceries? But rather, it looked at how long people are keeping groceries on their own pantry shelf. 59% of respondents said they now keep canned and boxed items on hand for 2 months or more. Now, this number was 43% pre-pandemic, so not a huge jump, but it does speak to continued stockpiling behavior for shelf-stable items. And what's interesting is that we've heard grocers discuss quite a bit about gains in meat and produce, but not that much regarding gains in the middle of the store where those canned and boxed items are. Perhaps this change in shopper behavior was maybe reflective of initial stockpiling, what we saw March through May, and then typical sales in those middle of store areas after May or so. Now, regarding frozen foods, we are seeing continued momentum there. 45% of shoppers report keeping items on hand that are frozen for a few months, where this was 34% pre-pandemic. And this is something where we have seen an increase in data points. A number of retailers, especially you look at the grocery titans, Walmart, Kroger, Albertsons, they have all reported good sales in frozen food and frozen food sales increasing year over year, even as of late. So this suggests that people are continuing to shop and use frozen foods, which is something that Kroger actually alluded to in their report that came out this week. Now, another interesting finding here as far as the RFG study is concerned is that customers that shop at standard grocers, so not Walmart or Amazon for the purpose of this study, they are shopping online less at these grocers. So again, grocers in this category might include Kroger, might include Albertsons, might include anyone who's considered a traditional grocer. So not a superstore like Walmart, not Target. So here's what we mean by this. Now, last year, 22% of shoppers who had shopped online for groceries in the prior 30 days before this survey happened back in late 2019 reported shopping online last at a standard grocer. Now, this number in April increased to 34%, meaning approximately one out of every three people had shopped last online for groceries at a standard grocer versus the likes of Walmart, versus going through Instacart, versus going through Amazon. This number, though, in the fall, has now declined back to 25%, which is just a slight bit above last year's levels. And this might be due to an increase in orders fulfilled by third parties. For example, Instacart fulfilled orders were at 43% in this data set, meaning those that had shopped online for grocery in the last 30 days, the last company they used to do so was Instacart, rather than a grocer's own service there. Amazon, by the way, sat at 18%. So they're still kind of lagging a little bit in terms of grocery, but one thing is for certain, customers that order grocery goods through Amazon seem to be relatively happy regarding that delivery. Now, as far as grocery spending is concerned overall, survey findings back up what we're seeing as far as recent macro data. 45% of the shoppers surveyed said they spend more on grocery now than pre-pandemic. 38% spend the same, 18% spend less. This is a slight variance from April. 51% of respondents in April said they spent more on groceries. So we're seeing the upper end kind of shift downward a little bit. So not as many people say they're spending more than pre-pandemic, but still, it does suggest a robust environment. And again, only 18% of people out there are spending actively less on groceries. And this certainly backs up the year-over-year data we're seeing, not only from the Fed, but also individual grocers. And I think this suggests continued strength going into 2021 for these grocers. Now, shoppers are beginning to come back to the stores in person on a more frequent basis. Earlier in the year, it was well known and it was a pronounced trend that overall traffic was down, but basket size was up. This was the case across pretty much any retailer that saw pandemic success. You think about, again, home improvement, you think about home furnishing stores, you think about sporting goods stores, and that's actually shown signs of waning, at least for grocery, as customers begin to become more comfortable with store trips in a pandemic. 27% of respondents for this fall survey say they're actually shopping more often at grocers than pre-pandemic, and that's up from April's survey a couple of percentage points. Meanwhile, 39% say they're shopping at approximately the same frequency as they were pre-pandemic. That's way up from just 20% in April. For context, 55% of people in April said they were shopping at grocery stores less often. So that number is down to just 34% now. And I think when you look at the country as a whole, you're seeing COVID cases and the like be just as high, if not higher, than they were in most places in April. But again, I think it's customers getting used to what shopping looks like in a pandemic. Maybe they're not worried as much about the virus, but they are making store trips more often. So what does that mean for grocers? For one, we should expect to see traffic continue to go up slightly, but retailers have got to battle to keep basket size and those share of wallet gains they made during the course of the early pandemic days. Additionally, we're seeing sentiment regarding online grocery begin to wane a little bit, at least according to this data set. Now, a lot of people out there have said, you know, hey, customers aren't going back to shopping in store. They like online grocery so much, or they've become used to it. What we're seeing here is that I would never suggest that there would be a pullback from online grocery shopping in 2021, but the number of shoppers overall across the board that shop at grocery stores planning to shop online more in 2021 actually fell from April's survey. So this is just 32% now of people say they're planning to shop online more in 2021 versus what they've done in pandemic conditions in 2020. So again, that means 68% of people out there either said they're going to do so the same amount or even less than what they did last year. So again, I think especially when you look at grocery store customers specifically, not Walmart, not Amazon customers, they are looking at shopping online maybe a little bit more. But again, it's that in-store experience that a lot of them are after. We saw that in the fall survey, and we're seeing it with the questions that have been asked about the future in terms of grocery shopping of these customers in this survey. But, and I think this is perhaps my biggest takeaway from all of this, is because Walmart was broken out as a separate retailer, respondents were really happy with Walmart's services. Nearly half of Walmart shoppers said that they were planning on using Walmart's e-com services more in 2021. So we talk on this show after earnings calls or during rollouts of initiatives about how Walmart is very proud of their own execution. They've got great numbers on the e-commerce front. But in terms of consumer sentiment, and this is something we don't get a lot of from Walmart, we can see here that their consumer sentiment really leads the way amongst brick and mortar retailers. And I think that's important to note, is that Walmart, you know, again, we talk about share of wallet, we talk about market share when it comes to grocery. Walmart's last earnings call wasn't that stellar in terms of grocery. Their same-store sales on the grocery front were only up about 5%, which paled in comparison to a lot of grocers. But the bottom line is they're making their customers happy with their e-commerce offerings. And so Walmart's doing something right on the e-commerce front at the very least. And I think that's something to just tuck away in your mind as we head into 2021, the fact that Walmart has been able to execute not only getting people orders, but making people happy with whether it be curbside, whether it be getting into the store to pick up their order. Walmart's getting the job done, and the numbers certainly bear that out versus the rest of the players in the grocery space. Well, that'll do it for our news segment. Again, coming up after this break, Santiago Gailino from Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Dr. Gailino will discuss a number of things, but mostly retail hiring, what seasonal retail hiring looked like this year, what some best practices have been during these pandemic conditions, and what retailers maybe should do or should think about doing based on his research regarding onboarding and training even current associates. In the run-up to this year's holiday shopping season, we saw many of the same seasonal hiring numbers from the likes of Target and Walmart, although somewhat less from apparel-centric department stores like Kohl's and Macy's. Regardless, seasonal retail hiring looked different this year. Out of necessity, as retailers had to find different ways to attract, recruit, and onboard talent as a result of the pandemic. Joining us to discuss those topics, as well as the overall state of retail hiring in general, is Dr. Santiago Gailino. He is the Charles W. Evans Distinguished Faculty Scholar and Assistant Professor of Operations, Information, and Decisions from Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
So first, so that the audience knows a bit about your background, I was wondering if you could tell us about your background, not only as it pertains to retail, but also kind of the scope of your ongoing research as well, because I know you do so much research on a year-to-year basis regarding the retail industry.
Yes. So I've started to focus on the retail industry in the early days of my PhD program. I thought it was a fascinating area to study and think about operational problems. That was what drove me to the PhD program then. And it hasn't disappointed. I think it's a unique setting where for researchers that want to look at data, it's very rich in that aspect. And I think the transformation that the retail industry has gone through the last few years has been interesting to follow and guessing also exciting to be on the other side and working in the industry. So I have focused on research that goes and look at digital transformation in retail and how to have a healthy integration between the online and the physical world. And at the same time, I think it's extremely relevant to have a good understanding of the what I would call retail fundamentals. And that involves the more traditional things that retailers need to do well. And they focus on store execution, inventory, and the role of the employees.
So as you mentioned, a lot of retail comes down to the fundamentals. It's, of course, the employees, the associates that are executing those fundamentals. So I was wondering from your perspective, if you could give us kind of a high up view as far as where we sit regarding the world of retail hiring, retail onboarding today.
Yes, I think it is an interesting time, especially because, I mean, this varies by the specific retail company and also retail sector, but traditionally, people tend to think of retail at a place where employees tend to rotate quite a lot. And so the onboarding needs to happen with part-timers and people that leave and you need to replace. And I think that that's probably still true today. However, what I've been seeing over the last few years is that the key thing that many retailers have to differentiate from others is their associates. And so having a good understanding of the right level of associates in the store at the time of the contact with the customer is becoming more and more relevant. And not only having the right number of people in the store, but also those associates are knowledgeable and ready to help is becoming critical. And I think that it is hard to do that if the company is facing a lot of fluctuations in terms of the staffing. And I think that to think about these associates as an important asset can change all the dynamics and transition towards something that puts the associates in the center of the strategy that the retailer has to succeed.
So you mentioned it. It's not only in terms of the number of associates you have to have on hand at any given time, but also ensuring that those associates are knowledgeable, are well-trained. What are some best practices that you've been kind of able to pick out surrounding not only the hiring process, but of course, onboarding and training associates this year?
So I've done some research in this space and specifically trying to measure and see the benefits of online learning. I think nowadays in the COVID time, we all have transitioned one way or another to a more virtual world. But even before COVID, many retailers reach out to online tools to train their employees. And this training can have an aspect of operational things that are specific to the retailers, or for those associates that are more in the front line selling, they can become more knowledgeable about the brands, the product they are selling. And by doing that, I've seen in my research that sales tend to go up. And it's not surprising. I mean, we nowadays, when customers go to a store, have usually done some research on the products, and they are not starting from scratch. And I think that the sales associates that are knowledgeable and willing to help can make a big difference. And online learning has been a tool that I looked and have been proven very attractive to do that. Not only because of the ability to communicate the content, but also because it's very scalable in comparison to some of the more traditional approaches, can be very flexible and adjust to a large number of associates.
I want to go a little bit further on that aspect of online learning, or e-learning, if you will, depending on where you're at. They're called different things. But of course, it's not just as simple as just throwing a learning platform out there for associates to use. It's got to have some measure of engagement with those associates so that they do pick up that required knowledge. I was wondering if you've noticed some certain trends regarding what companies are doing well in order to get associates engaged with that online learning process.
Yes, so I will put two main tactics, so two main things that retailers and brands have been doing to engage the associates in that e-learning process. On the one side is what we can call a gamification of the learning. So when you put these learning modules in an e-learning platform, now you can start to get points when you answer a question correctly and show some level of competition that is healthy and fun among the staff of your own retail company or across retailers. Not only that, if you think about the benefit of these platforms that keep track of the learning and the points and the stars that you accumulate through the learning, that can potentially be some attractive feature that the sales associate could show if he or she are looking to move to a different sector within the retailer or to move to a different retailer, because they can show their badge in the learning platform. At the same time, besides this gamification and point accumulation and whatnot, many brands and retailers have put incentives there for those associates that complete the training and complete the training successfully. And so individual brands that are sponsoring a learning module can give a deep discount of some of their products for those associates that complete the training, or retailers can give some incentives that can be monetary or in terms of products for those associates that engage. In many cases, this engagement happens on the associate's own time, and so they don't need to pay for the time that they spend training if they don't want to. But even when they do this on their own personal time, there can be some incentive because of the discount or the benefit obtained after completing the module successfully.
Some interesting things to keep in mind, certainly for retailers that are developing those online or e-learning platforms for their new and existing associates. Now, I want to take a bit of a right turn here. We've talked on the show with past guests about how talent evaluation is constantly evolving, and it evolved quite a bit this year with the demand for pickers at a lot of retailers. You think of Kroger, you think of Target, you think of Walmart, certainly among the top there. And I know this is something that has been involved in your research a little bit. What are some different means by which retailers are evaluating not only the potential talent as it comes in, but where they need those associates as we see a continued push towards that omni-channel presence for a lot of the nation's biggest retailers?
Yes, so this is, of course, another very, very important aspect. And I think that where to allocate your resources is a classical problem in management. And this, of course, is no exception for the sales associate. And one of the things that we have studied is how to do that in a more data-driven and sophisticated way. And it's interesting to see at least from our perspective, how these resource allocations can have big variations across store locations and store formats. And what I mean by this is not the kind of the obvious thing that a bigger store need more people and a smaller store need less people. But we have seen in the data that maybe you also need to incorporate factors, just the intensity of the competition in a particular store versus another, and to allocate some weight in this allocation based on the characteristics and the demographics of the particular store. And so these staffing allocation decisions traditionally are done with some ratio of historical sales of the store. And I think that that, of course, is a good starting point and how many retailers have been thinking about the problem in the past. However, the problem that you have with that logic is that you might end up in a self-fulfilling prophecy on how you want to allocate your resources. And in fact, like I mentioned in these examples, there are some factors that will help you better allocate your sales associates that are not exclusively connected to your sales forecast or the historical sales that you have for that particular location.
I think that idea of the self-fulfilling prophecy is interesting, especially if you're using historical sales data from, say, pre-pandemic times. What are some ways that retailers can look and analyze in terms of allocation of their associates, allocation of that human capital for this kind of unprecedented time, Q4 2020 going into Q1 of next year?
Yes. So one of the things that for us was key in the research process of this space was to try to take advantage at the local level, meaning the individual store, of those natural variations that happens. If you have a system that is keeping track of the sales associates, I mean, every retailer knows that the plan for those sales associates for the next day or the next week usually has variations because of absenteeism or not being able to find part-timers or full-timers that need some extra time. So the plan has variations with respect to the actual in terms of the sales associate. Well, that variability can be a lead indicator on how you are doing in staffing for your particular store. The intuition behind this, I think, is simple. If you had a sales forecast and a forecast for your sales associate in the store, and suddenly out of the 10 associates that you plan, only 8 show up, you have 2 that were not there. And then you can compare if your sales forecast was dramatically decreased because of that 20% reduction in sales associate. If that's the case, well, then that will be a signal that your sales associate level is appropriate. However, if you see that there was no difference in the sales forecast and the actual sales, well, that might be an indication that you might be a little bit overstaffed. And the same logic can apply in the other direction. There can be some cases where there was a very small reduction in the sales associate that you plan and the actual. However, the drop in sales could be significant. And so this natural variation in your sales associate showing up to the store have valuable information in order to learn what you need to do with your staffing levels to stay on track for your sales forecast. And again, I think that the unique feature of this, in addition to exploring these natural variation, is the fact that you can do this at the individual store level, which is usually a feature that many of these staffing methods don't tend to have.
I think that's a really interesting concept there, using that natural variation, the call-ins, the ask-offs, the time of short staffing to be able to evaluate where your staffing should be or needs to be in a particular area. So I want to move on from that a little bit, because I know a lot of your research explores the potential for operational enhancements or improvements as it pertains to retail. And I was curious from your view, kind of tossing out even the onboarding aspect of things, what are some general ways in which retailers could or should improve their operations going into 2021? I felt it only right to look ahead since we are at the end of the calendar year here.
Yes. So I think one lesson that we've learned in the last few months is that the integration between the systems is key. And this is an integration between is the online offering of the retail business, but also the physical offering of the retail business. And I think that each one of us has navigated this transition, trying to integrate both experiences as customers. On the retail side, I think that retailers need to think about these issues in the same way. So making efforts to be able to offer an integrated experience is key, because it is not trivial to forecast how the customer would like to interact with us being the retailer the next time they connect. And so I think that that would be one aspect. The other aspect that to me has been also interesting to observe is that the value of the personal interactions have increased over time. And although I understand that during COVID times, we tend not to have physical contact and interact with a sales associate directly, or that has been an issue, at the same time, that doesn't mean that we haven't reached out to a retailer in a drop-off point or a pickup point. And those interactions also have a lot of value and an opportunity to do well and be reminded of how well that particular retailer is dealing with their operations. Or unfortunately, in the flip side, long queues, disappointment in those pickup points or drop-off points can drive a bad experience that the retailer will need to avoid. So I think that my take from having conversation with different retailers is that all these interfaces have been reduced in number many times when the customer interact with the retailer, but have increased in value and impact.
So I want to wrap up with this. We often talk to researchers and the like about maybe things that they've got going in the pipeline. What's some research regarding retail that you have in the pipeline here for the next year or two that you're actively working on?
Well, so right now I'm trying to focus on two main areas. So the first area that I'm trying to focus on is to try to understand the role of retail platforms in this retail ecosystem. I think for many years, I focus on traditional retailers trying to expand into the online world, and then trying to also understand traditional online retailers coming into the physical world. And so these phenomena is interesting and key to understand. However, I will argue there is here a third player or a third type of business that has disrupted this space, that is digital platforms and how these platforms are affecting the retail landscape. So that would be one area. And then another area that I've been thinking about trying to find opportunities to do research, because like I said many times, these research are based on the collaboration with some retail company that is willing to share data. Some of these other researches in a more traditional place, trying to rethink the role of prices and how the algorithmic pricing can be a tool to successfully compete in a market. And I think that with the rich data set environment that we're seeing today, trying to understand to what extent the intensity of competition and cross-selling across products within a retail setting can influence the optimal pricing that you can have is a relevant problem. And I've been looking at that aspect as well.
We'll be looking forward to that research for sure. Well, once again, Dr. Santiago Gallino, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
Well, we thank Santiago for joining us once again on the show, and we hope to have a few more Wharton faculty join the show as we get into 2021. So we're excited about that partnership as far as the podcast is concerned. So let's look ahead at a couple of stories. As I mentioned early on, I wanted to discuss Rite Aid briefly, really the only retail earnings call of note this week, and not a ton from this earnings call that warranted making it the main news story. But I think one of the reasons I'm looking ahead to Rite Aid just really quickly here is that their front end same store sales, excluding tobacco, did rise slightly, 0.3%. Still trailing Walgreens and CVS as far as that was concerned. And even though They had an earnings beat, and that took a lot of the headlines there. You saw some stalling as far as Rite Aid was concerned, because we've talked about their partnerships with Amazon. We've talked about some of their other strategic partnerships there, and it doesn't seem as though these are driving sales like they are with Walgreens partnerships, with CVS's partnerships, and some of the initiatives that those two are doing. So again, obviously a lower store count. Rite Aid is closed stores. They actually mentioned impairment charges because of these closed stores. But I'll be anxious to see really the next 2 to 3 earnings calls here coming out of a pandemic environment. You would think all three of those retailers would really see improvement. And we had to this point for Rite Aid, but even though they beat on earnings, it still seemed as though there was something to be desired, at least compared to their two main competitors. Now, another looking ahead story that we wanted to touch on was Kroger naming the top 10 trending foods according to their data for 2020 and predictions for 2021. It's obviously the predictions part that's the looking ahead part. One of the interesting things regarding their 2020 foods is there was a lot of comfort foods mixed in. You saw flavored potato chips come in at number 3. You saw heavy whipping cream come in at number 5. Look, you can only do really a handful of things with heavy whipping cream, but mostly it's to make dishes richer. You saw also variety chocolate on their top 10 list. So again, a lot of things that were really comfort food related. And in fact, comfort food was one of the food trends to watch in 2021 as far as Kroger was concerned. Another thing that Kroger's looking ahead to is maybe foods that are designed to increase overall health, overall energy levels, and the like. This includes foods with additives, but also foods for gut health and so forth. Looking at keto foods as well being a major factor in 2021. Mushrooms. Now, this is something, you know, it's interesting. We talked on the show, I believe, a couple of years about Whole Foods is looking ahead in terms of foods that were really going to pick up momentum. And mushrooms were on that list. And we have seen mushrooms certainly make some progress. But Kroger's seeing this as a major aspect of what they're looking to carry, maybe more private brands of. Also, meatless products or products with a more eco-friendly bent, something that Kroger has obviously been big on. And then innovation in the fresh categories. Now, one of the things I've always been interested in is developments in produce categories. So one thing Kroger mentioned in this report, no-cry onions, plant-based coatings, for example, Appeal, which we actually talked about on the Food Focus podcast so many years ago. It's designed to basically extend the shelf life of produce or keep produce fresher for longer. They talked about in-store hydroponic farms. So they really feel as though there's going to be some developments on the produce front that are going to draw people to these innovations. And again, a lot of this information comes from 8451, which is Kroger's subsidiary that looks at data and analytics that they acquired a few years back. So again, I'm going to be looking ahead at this because it matters for retailers where they think the food trends are going to pop up, because it's not just snap your fingers and introduce a private label brand. For example, plant-based products, Kroger's been talking about developing those now for a couple of years. And just over the last couple of quarters, we are seeing it explode on those Kroger shelves. So it does take some time to develop these products, to market these products, to package these products. And I'm very interested to see if we don't see other retailers kind of jump on certain bandwagons like this in regards to their private label products. Going back to our interview with Cheryl Sullivan, again, she said private label is going to be king in 2021. We know Kroger's got a lot of private label products across all of these categories, whether you're looking at keto foods, whether you're looking at plant-based foods, whether you're looking at even mushroom-based foods. But that's something that we haven't seen a ton of with other maybe non-natural foods retailers. For example, Albertsons, we haven't seen the same development. So will other retailers follow suit? Will you see the likes of Spartan Ash, for example, develop some private label brands of their own under that food club branding? So again, major thing to look ahead to as we keep the grocery theme throughout this podcast in 2021. That'll do it for us. A big thanks to Leighton working behind the scenes for us. And again, big thanks to Dr. Galino for joining us here on the show. I'm Trent, saying so long until next Sunday with the holiday. No midweek podcast this week, so we'll see you 7 days from now.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.